On today's show, we welcome Katie Godek, an endurance athlete and awesome lady from California. Welcome, Katie.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited. I watch your feed and I see that you're just out there, you know, being, fit and happy with your beaming smile. You got cool pictures with delicious donuts at times that I want to eat. And, you really just sort of look like, you know, a fit person that's having a great time enjoying that sort of lifestyle. So it's great to see. But for people listening in that, you know, haven't come across you yet, could you tell us a bit about your endurance life?
Sure. I mean, firstly, I think it's funny that you introduced me as a fit person that also likes donuts, because I think that's everybody's dream.
It is.
So my endurance life, I get this question a lot, which is, have you been doing this your whole life? And the answer is no. Especially in the United States, we are just leaps and bounds behind Australia in getting the youth to do triathlon. I've heard stories about like the Wheaties boxes that you eat in the morning would always have like Ironman athletes on them. In Australia, I have some friends that told me that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if it's true, but that's what they told me.
I imagine the Nutri-Grain box, we have like an Ironman, sport that where they're paddling, they swim and they paddle and they run on the beach and they do some stuff. I'm sure that there's probably triathletes on some cereal boxes as well, but like certainly in our household, there's always been the actual like the lifesaver style Ironman people on the Nutri-Grain box.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Can't speak for Wheaties. I've never had Wheaties before.
I didn't grow up doing that. I was a casual runner at best, and I was actually a competitive horseback rider for jumping. Go figure. And I always loved swimming. So I got into triathlon about 5 years ago. I love it. I will say that it is a growing challenge that never ends for me with the bike portion of it, as I've been swimming and running longer. But I still really enjoy the sport. I got certified as a USA Triathlon Coach Level 1 2 years ago, sort of just out of curiosity to see what it was all about. And that's been really cool. And then about 2 years ago, I met some really good friends of mine who were also doing triathlon, and they also did ultra marathons. And I kind of said, what's that? And they said, don't ask questions, just come with us. And so that was a mistake. I did a few pretty gnarly trails with them at first. I think my first real trail run that I did with them was 17 miles. And it was just way too long for me to just go from doing no trail runs to 17 miles, but I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. It's always fun though. That's the thing with trail running is you can just walk if you need to.
Yes.
So that's really pleasant and comfortable. If you're feeling tired, you just slow down. And I love it. I love trail running now a lot.
Okay. And this seems to be an interesting progression. I feel like I've gotten the bug a little bit as well for the trail running. And people seem to progress. Again, maybe it is the thing about like you can walk if you want to walk, you can run if you want to run. Some of the distances are so long, you know. There's steep. It's technical at times. But where do you put your feet? The nature aspect and being out amongst nature. Yeah, there is something magical about trail running.
Yeah, I would agree. There's the elite trail runners that do not stop and walk because, you know, they're just on a different level. However, I think the majority of the people that attempt to do an ultra, like a 50K or longer, they're definitely doing it because it's nice to be outdoors in nature with the variation of speed and getting to eat like potato chips and all of that stuff. So.
Yep. Potato chips. I mean, look, that ranks highly on my go-to bad food list. And
yeah.
If trail running allows that to happen, I can see that could be a good thing. I'm doing the low carb, high fat thing, and I don't think that chips. Like, I've got this little thing on my fridge and it's color-coded, my coach gave me, and there's a red zone of, like, you don't eat this. Chips is on that list. But race day is different, you know? Like, if you're out on a trail and you got to get those calories in, chips is probably okay. Maybe not the best food if I was talking to my coach, but still enjoyable.
If you're a coach, like, you can't try anything new on race day, so you're gonna eat the chips on race day, so you need to make sure that you're training ahead of time for that.
I see. I'm yeah. pretty sure he listens, so I no doubt will hear about this one and his thoughts. He's very encouraging, so I think chips may feature. The triathlon coach thing is very interesting. So is that obviously just to see what it's like and the curiosity behind it. But can you tell us a bit about that? Did that sort of in any way change the way that you were looking at triathlon after you sort of went through that or how you were training yourself or how you brought on? Do you have your own coach after that?
Yeah. So getting certified through this program with USAT, USA Triathlon, which is the governing body of triathlon in the United States, is not easy, but I will say that it also doesn't mean you are the world's greatest coach once you have the certification. So there's different levels. I specify I'm a level one. I want to say it goes to level three, and there's only not a handful, but just not very many people are actually a level three certified coach. So if you're working with someone that is a level three coach, you're probably in good hands, unless you just don't like their personality, but at least they'll be very knowledgeable of what they're teaching you. So I would say without fail, definitely work with a level three coach. If you can, you can afford it, you like them. Level one is someone who can help. And by the way, this is my opinion, because there's actually, you know, people that have done like 50 Ironman distance races and they've been doing triathlon their whole lives, but they maybe didn't get certified and you have to go through the levels. So maybe they're level one, but they've been doing this for like 40 years. So I guess speaking to my experience, I'm someone who is good at very specific things in triathlon. Like, I've been doing open water coaching for a while, and I feel very comfortable at helping people with that because I live a mile from the ocean, and it's one of my favorite parts of doing triathlon. So that's something I do for coaching. I'm definitely great at helping people through training plans and understanding like what it takes for the different distances and what you're going to need to put into that. But I'm not leading bike groups. I'm not taking people to Kona. So that's what I mean by it was fun for me to get certified, to kind of get more information, get interested, and be on my way to, I'm hoping, 5 to 10 years from now, being a level three coach and being pretty solid at it.
Okay. Well, that's a good goal to have.
Yeah.
And do you have your own coach?
I do not have a coach that I pay and am exclusive to, but I am fortunate that I was coached by a good friend of mine for my first triathlon many years ago, and he's always a good advisor to me. And then my bike fitter, Ian Murray, is a level three certified USAT coach. And he has been so helpful to me, giving me tips about things. He knows that I have this race. I'm doing Ironman Santa Rosa this weekend. He was prepping me for like the tire pressures that I'm going to use and all of that. And I actually work with him in the summer doing the open water coaching. It's a program for the Malibu Triathlon that they have, and he's the head coach, and he needs about four coaches to help. There's about 200 people that come out every weekend to do these open water swim clinics, so we got to have a lot of coaches and a lot of lifeguards to help with the sheer amount of bodies.
Yeah, wow. It's an interesting picture to sort of, you know, see there, like so many people sort of rallying together to get better. It sounds like a good program.
It's a beautiful chaos. That's what I'll call it.
So you mentioned like the open water coaching. I love the idea of open water swimming. I think I just love everything about it. You know, getting out there, going for a swim. I need to get myself a wetsuit. It's starting to get pretty cold here in Australia. Probably not cold by most people's standards, but certainly by Queensland and my own. And so open water swimming sounds to me like you're very at home with the swimming. Sounds like you're very at home with the running, but you mentioned that the biking can be a bit of a challenge. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's like for you?
Yeah. It is my biggest pain point because they say that you don't win your triathlon in the swim. You win it biking and running. So I have been working very diligently the last couple of years to get better at the bike. It all started for me as a young child. I don't know why, but I refused to learn to ride a bike until I was 12.
Okay.
And I used to think that that was the oldest anyone in the history of the world had ever learned to ride a bike. But since the world doesn't revolve around me and I've spoken to others, I've learned that actually sometimes people learn to ride a bike as an adult. Mm. So I'm not that far off. But it started from that. And then it's kind of just like a mild anxiety that I have around descending steep hills. And again, that's not abnormal. Plenty of people have fears of that, but it's silly for me to think about. I've ridden a substantial amount of technical steep downhills and I'm always fine. It's just this little thing that I carry, but I end up signing up for races that have really steep technical downhills. And I do it to force myself to not, have any sort of like regression in my pursuit of being really strong on the bike.
Well, that's certainly a display of your mindset, you know, staring down the barrel of fears that might be somewhat entrenched and looking them in the eye and conquering them over and over again, or at least keeping a good handle on them, which sounds cool.
Yeah, I like to think I'm keeping a good handle on them on my best days, for sure.
And I saw that you had recently had like a pretty gnarly crash on the bike, that there was like a, you know, fresh teeth. Like, oh my gosh, I it looked painful, and somehow you're still just smiling, you know, after the fact. But seeing that journey and seeing what was sort of happening there, would you mind? I mean, you don't have to, but would you mind telling us a little bit about that?
Yeah, no, I don't mind at all. I know it's funny. I'm like, oh, I'm getting so much better at the bike. And you're like, well, I actually saw that you.
True. That is true. But then, you know, like as for me, you're dusting yourself off and you hop back on. I mean, it is inspiring to see that you really do. Like if you've got a fear of it and if you've had a crash, that could be it for some people. They might just say, look, I'm not hopping back on the bike now. This bad things happen. My fear is the bike too. And it's a weird thing, but just clipping in the clipless pedals, you know, it's not even like it's a fear, but doesn't even actually make any sense why I don't really hop and ride my bike. I love riding my mountain bike. I lived my whole childhood years and teenage years on a bike. I have really no desire to hop on a bike and ride. So I'm going to have to get over that when I start getting back into triathlon again. But yeah, but hats off to you for getting back on the bike. Excuse the pun.
I'm fortunate as well that I have a good inner circle of friends that train with me who just wouldn't put up with me not getting back on the bike, even if I wanted to attempt that route. So I really appreciate them. If they're listening, they know who they are. The crash was unfortunate and also just random. I think that's the best way I could put it. Because if in my anxiety of descending hills, my fear is always some big catastrophic event, like I'm going really fast around a curve and I hit something or fly off and, you know, I scrape all my skin off, not to scare the people listening. But that's not actually what happened. I, to be honest, was just descending a hill that I was very familiar with and had ridden many, many times. It was at the end of a long ride that I was doing, training for this Ironman. I had just parted ways with my friend that was riding with me. I had maybe 4 or 5 miles left of the ride. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to go up this hill that's just over here that I'm used to riding just to get a little climbing in. And as I was coming down, I just went over the handlebars. I wasn't going particularly fast. I think in hindsight, I hit a patch of gravel, and it was just the perfect storm of I hit my brakes going through the gravel. My bike wasn't perfectly balanced, blah, blah, blah. And I just took a spill. And unfortunately, I took a spill onto my teeth. I broke 3 teeth clean in half. I just knew it immediately when I hit the ground. I was able to get right back up again. And fortunately, there were, no one believes this, there was an ambulance and a fire truck in the intersection already. And they just watched me fly off my bike and then kind of just went woo woo and drove over and scooped me up. As they scooped me up, I kind of licked my teeth and thought, yep, those are gone. And then I said to them, I don't have any teeth, do I? And they replied, well, you have some. They were pretty hilarious. I really appreciated their spirit. And they actually, the paramedics were showing me all their scars from cycling. And some of them were missing teeth and had broken teeth also. So I felt right at home.
Oh, wow. So, like, you know, that's going to be a story. That's going to be a story forever. I mean, the people being there in the intersection, you know, and that probably would, like, I don't know, I'm just imagining myself coming off the bike, maybe being in a bit of a daze, all of a sudden sirens are just like whooping and the ambulance are here. It's like, have I skipped ahead in time? I don't remember calling anybody. Has somebody else already called? And then the photo of the cracked teeth, like, holy gosh. I mean, that's scary. It's a scary thought. And yet, you know, you sort of just confidently carried yourself ahead. Now, there was like a GoFundMe campaign or something along those lines that I don't know if that's still going, where people could help out, or could you tell us a little bit about that?
I never used GoFundMe. I had just heard of it in passing. I hadn't even donated to one. And the kind of gruesome part of having an accident like this, yes, I broke teeth, but luckily I really like my new teeth. So it hasn't changed my life too much in that respect, but the cost of dentistry in the United States is ridiculous. Going into this experience, but I really know it now. So I kind of was faced with this bill after having my teeth fixed. I mean, I had 3 root canals, 6 teeth were crowned. It was a lot. It was all emergency, had to be done right away. So I, through the encouragement of people that follow me, actually, who kept saying, we want to help, let us help you, they suggested to do a GoFundMe. So I set that up. That was about a month ago now. And we actually raised half of the cost of the medical dental bills and my bike, which is awesome. I didn't even know what to expect if anyone would donate anything. So to get half of it, that was really awesome.
Wow. That is impressive, isn't it? So I feel like, you know, you never really just can know how much people around you want to help. I don't take things very well from people. It's a real challenge. But, you know, the truth is that there are times in life where you do need to take from others, and you do need to be able to just open yourself up to the fact that other people are willing to give, and that it's doing the right thing by them as well to let them do that. And why would you suffer in silence or suffer openly if people are willing to lend a hand? Because no doubt if somebody else is in a similar thing that we would help. Do you know?
Yeah, no, I can relate to what you said. I had to think about it for a long time, because asking for money from other people, and a lot of these people are perfect strangers to me. I felt I don't know, I felt like I was like letting them down and myself down. I felt like I should be figuring this out by myself. But after giving it thought, I thought, you know what? I do want your money.
Yeah. And the new teeth do look really good. You got that beaming white smile going again. So that's handy.
Yeah, it is handy.
Having your teeth not right, like, you know, all of a sudden, just like that, like you're just going for a ride, you know, call it. I mean, who knows how long you're out on the bike for, but you wake up, look in the mirror, brush your teeth, ready to go for my ride, come home, missing a few teeth. Do you know, like that's not, you know, anyone's ideal morning. And in every interaction, you're smiling, you're talking. Teeth play such a big part, you know. So it's you want them to be on point.
Yeah. Or actually, I don't know if you know the joke you just made. You don't want them to be on point.
Well, that's true. That is true. Actually, yes.
I've got them on point.
So if in terms of like you're doing all of these, you know, triathlons, you've got this, you know, Ironman coming up, doing trail running, obviously loving the open water swimming. There must be a lot of benefits that have come into your life from being an endurance athlete. So could you tell us a little bit about what that's been like for you?
Yeah, the benefits of what I do. Well, there are so many. There are the obvious ones of it helps keep me healthy. Active, it contributes to like a level of happiness that I learned I needed when I was a teenager. I have had anxiety pretty bad, most of my life. It didn't just, you know, manifest because of the bike. And it runs in my family. Like I actually remember growing up and we would have stories about my grandmother, my grandfather, needing to go to therapy or taking medication for anxiety. And so not that it was normal to me, but I just understood like, oh, this happened to me and it happens to my family. So anyways, the point is, I remember the first day I ever went to see a therapist as a teenager because my anxiety was just getting so out of control. It was causing me to have panic attacks. I didn't know what was going on. And the therapist sat me down and she said, do you exercise? And I thought it was a weird question because I was like, I don't even know you. Why are you asking me to exercise? But her reasoning behind that question was she thought it would be one of the many tools I could learn to help manage anxiety. And so I took that to heart and I think I was 16. I already was as I mentioned, a competitive horseback rider, but you know, your horse does a lot of the work of the riding. So I remember I would go out for more walks. I would go out and run a lot more. I would swim a lot more and it helps. And to this day, if I'm having a bad day, if I feel like I'm going to have a panic attack, this and that, I just go, get me out of this house, get me out of this building. I have to go do something. I want to go swim, bike, run. It's been a life-changing medicine for me.
Yeah, well, that's really intriguing because a lot of people do talk about the benefits. Like I've seen, is it Jim Walmsley? Like, I can't really remember. One of the elite ultra running guys right now from like trail world. I'm pretty sure he's mainly from trail. Talked about that. Like, was in a space really dark. Then, you know, ended up going and doing these long runs. And apparently the therapist from memory said to him, you know, you see the correlation. You run, you're happy, and you're not feeling bad. You don't run and you give up the running for a while and you're back to feeling bad again. It's the world sort of closing in on you. And so then he just kept running more and more and more. Now he's one of the best in the world. And not to say that you have to become the best in the world, but he feels great by comparison to how he used to feel. I'm pretty sure it was him. But yeah, it that sounds intriguing to me, that exercise is the medicine.
Yeah, exercise is the medicine. And also this conversation just comes at the most perfect timing in my life. I'm learning that exercise can't be the only medicine though, because after breaking my teeth, having to take a little bit of time off to heal from that, from training, that was kind of a hiccup. I then got... immediately following like this really serious viral infection that I thought was a flu, but it lasted for almost a month. And I was just not able to get out and do the volume and intensity of training that I needed to and wanted to do for this training plan for my race. And it really bummed me out. And I was getting really anxious and depressed about it. So I think that lesson learned is I'm never giving up trail running and triathlon and ocean swimming as long as my body will allow me to, but I need to rely a little less heavily on it because I felt like I had no purpose when I was having bed and not able to do those things. I think the kids call it FOMO. I had fear of missing out on all that thing that I usually complain about.
Yeah, that's intriguing, isn't it? Like, you know, when certain things are tied to our identity, or maybe we don't even realize that they are, but it becomes the norm. You know, one of the other guys, I think it might have been Travis Coleman, another guy that I've had a chat to and have met up with at a triathlon, and he was talking about, I think it was him, basically saying that, you know, he trained and I think had an injury or something, but that kept him out for a long time. And all of a sudden there's that spiral of all the good feelings and all the things that you're used to doing, that not only are you not getting all the endorphin high anymore, but you are having that feeling of missing out and not getting to do what you love. So what is it that then, how do you overcome that? How do you then tie something else in from a purpose perspective?
I mean, well, that's it's such a big question, right? And I think it's got to be different for everybody else. For me, though, the soul searching I did as I was laying in bed, just hating life, I thought, well, I still am a triathlete and an ultra runner, even though I'm laying in bed healing from the infection that I had. So I haven't lost my identity in that sense. And I think to just, like, this is gonna sound really bad, but just cheer up. Like, I wanted to just say that to myself, like, this is happening to you whether you like it or not. So just look forward to the next time you get to go for a run or a swim, and do your best to be appreciative of the things that you have in that moment. So for some people, maybe they feel like they don't have a lot in that moment. And I think that's the work to be done. Now that I'm a certified psychologist in the 20 minutes we've been talking, I think I just really want to advise all my patients that you need to do your own personal work on why. No, I'm going down a rabbit hole here. I think just being appreciative of what you have is the best route. So I realized, all right, I'm appreciative that I'm still going to be healthy at some point. I'm going to get out of this bed and everything's going to be fine.
There's a thing that I like that is called a joy journal. Have you ever heard of that before?
No, I have not.
So we have this thing, and, you know, like I went and became a life coach years ago. It was a dream, you know, and it was fun. I went to Melbourne, did some neuro-linguistic programming, a course, and it was really cool. But one of the things that intrigued me, we came across this thing, learned about this reticular activation system, and our mind gets pummeled with so much information every second. Like, there's just so much going on. And so it's kind of like, to sort of paint a picture would be, you're going to go and buy a new car. So say I'm going to buy a Jeep, and all of a sudden I've decided, yep, you know, a Jeep Wrangler is the car I want. And then all of a sudden I'm driving along, I'm seeing Jeep Wranglers everywhere. And you think, wow, how is it that all of a sudden all these Jeeps are popping out at me? And, like, where were they before? Like, I've decided to buy this Jeep and they were always there. It's that, you know, we delete or at least store away so much information because it's just too much to comprehend. And our brain just goes and finds all of the things that are important to us. So all of a sudden Jeep's important to me. It turns the volume down on a lot of other things. And then there's a Jeep. And so learning about that, then if you translate that into the joy journal side of things, we kind of in a way are a little bit programmable. So if each day, you know, you could do it at the end of the day, start of the day, throughout the day, you had like a little pad and you wrote down the things that you're grateful for. So you might say, look, I'm grateful for my new teeth. I'm grateful for, you know, the health that I have. Say in your case, you know, you're still alive, still kicking. But you're just having to slow down and appreciate the moment, whatever that might be. the first couple of days that you get into the habit of doing this joy journal, you might not have a super long list of things. But then what happens is, as the days are progressing, because your mind's saying, oh, what's important to me is things to be grateful for, what starts to happen is all things that you can be grateful for start jumping out the page, jumping out of life at you. And then, like, even for myself, like, I feel like I've got an attitude of gratitude, but even me, the volume turns up and I get to start then, you know, finding more and more things to feel positive about. And then I'm on that upward spiral. So yeah, that joy journal thing, I've a lot of people I talk to at times, I'm like, if they're having a hard time, that would be my Tom MD or psychologist, yeah, not qualified, thing that I would suggest to do, because it's helped me in my life.
Wow. I mean, it sounds lovely. I should have had that journal the last couple of months. And in hindsight, I have written down things that I've been grateful for. Also, coincidence or not, I was cleaning out some things right before we hopped on this call, and it was a piece of paper I had written things that I was grateful for. And one of them just made me laugh. I put that I was grateful for the wisdom of children. I don't have kids. I don't live with children. I do work with kids. But I just, that made me laugh a lot. They're so brutally honest. I mean, I cannot tell you how many times I've had like a zit on my face and I go and teach a kid, and the first thing out of their mouth is, what's that on your face? You know, you buy it, but it really makes you shape up. Like, you have to really own who you have that zit on. Yeah.
Mm. I love the thing about kids too, is their joy and their willingness to have fun and, you know, bubbles and different things that you just look and you think, like, when did I stop loving this stuff? Like, maybe I still love it on the inside, but they're just, you know, not ashamed at all, just to go flat out and just be their true selves. I really love that.
Yeah. I mean, that's such a good point. That is definitely why I enjoy being around kids. It lets me be kind of a kid again. I try to be so, you know, proper. Well, me being proper as I can be, very adult. Mm-hmm. But when I'm with these kids that I teach, it's just a hoot. I have a list of notes on my phone on the notes app of just stuff that they've said that I just couldn't even believe. the tail they spin, or the answers to my questions. I mean, one time I gave a prize to one of them, and it's absurd. It's a panda, stuffed panda that's in a banana. Mm-hmm. And I gave it to this child, and they screamed as loud as they could. And they grabbed it and they hugged it to their chest and they said, I've always wanted one of these. and I was like, in my head, I was like, well, that's a lie. You didn't know this existed. But to them, they did. They always wanted a banana.
So appreciative too. You know, I like that. I do like that. And so we've talked a bit about, mindset and, you know, touched on it sort of throughout this. So from your perspective, what do you think makes up a successful mindset?
As cheesy as it sounds, it's positivity. And it's a little bit of gratitude, like you were saying. And it's something I constantly need to work on with myself. I do find that I've been hardwired to see the negatives of things more out of a way to protect myself because of my anxious background. Mm-hmm. So it's been, if I look for the negative first, I will be better prepared to handle it with my anxiety if something goes wrong, versus looking for the positive, and then you're only prepared for something wonderful to happen, and then if it goes wrong, I'm in a world of hurt. But that's not really how it works. That's the anxiety talking. So I think just having a mindset of prepare for the best. Don't be so unprepared for the worst that you're really going to be in trouble. But yeah, I get pep talks all the time from friends and family that say, well, what if you just calmed down? What if you just thought about it like this? Just say it out loud, even if you don't believe it. And I used to think that was all rah-rah, you know, hippy-dippy stuff, but I think there's something to it. I think there is. Yeah.
I think I'm geared the other way, like as in looking for positives, frustratingly to people at times that something could be happening and I'll be looking at it and I'll be, because in my head I don't want to feel bad and I imagine like positive, neutral, negative. I want to try and stay in the positive area as much as I possibly can. And so, you know, I'm always looking for the positives. But we got to meet a neuroscientist at work and through work as coaches my previous role before this leader role. And it was really intriguing that the person was explaining to us that with the brain, there's actually five parts, and forgive me if I'm wrong or any neuroscientists listening to this, but the five parts of our brain are dedicated to recognizing threat, but only one part dedicated to recognizing reward. And so, and that would have kept us alive back in the day. Oop, tiger, whoop, snake, you know, whatever it might be, got to run away now. Whereas in this day and age, really, you know, what are we running from? The threats aren't like what they once were, but perhaps our brain hasn't gotten to that point where we are, there's an imbalance there of looking for threat rather than looking for reward. So I kind of thought that was interesting, because I kind of then wonder, like, are most people, you know, in that, if we all are in that same space where there's an imbalance of finding threats, and then, so that would then mean that you really do have to put work into training yourself to look for the positives. And then in my head, it's just like a muscle. Like if that's what you're used to looking for, then you're probably more likely than not find it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, wow, I didn't know that about the five quadrants or the five ways of being, not negative, but as you put it, looking for the danger, the self-preservation kind of kicks in. Yeah, I mean, that's the answer then. If we only have one part that is tilted to the good, we really have to overuse that to kind of tip the scale.
Mm. And do you find then that, you know, like you're making this like an effort? It seems to me that you're constantly working on being more positive and finding the positives and reflecting. Do you feel like that you're getting better and better at actually being more positive and finding the positives?
Yes. I definitely have days where I regress back into the negatives, especially as races get closer, I'm realizing. But I am getting better about it. I am also able to talk myself out of it more versus relying on others to talk me out of it. And I think that's the whole point. There is a lot of weight being thrown behind the love yourself movement, as I like to call it. Mm-hmm. That have anxiety, depression, or just are unhappy with themselves, they typically look for that happiness to be created in other things or by other people. And it's now societally apparent that you can't do that. So yeah, my biggest wins are when I can go, no, actually, it's going to be okay. And no one gave me like a list of facts to prove to me that it's going to be okay. I kind of just went, that's going to be all right. Yeah, that's my goal, is to be self-sufficient in using that one part of my brain, as you put it.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And so you've got this race, a full distance Ironman coming up on the weekend.
Yes.
That's going to be exciting. First time having a hit out at the full distance.
Yep, this will be my first full distance attempt, and it's so long to me. It is such a long distance where I truly can't recreate it prior. I guess I wouldn't recreate it prior, but I can't simulate, that's the word I was looking for, the experience. You just do it in chunks. So we rode a century to prepare for the cycling. You swim, you know, pretty close to the 2.4 distance, or you do really long distance in the pool, but it's split up into intervals. And for the run, my friends actually did run a couple marathons, maybe just one, in preparation, but that's just because they wanted to do that particular race. But to do all of the distance together, you don't do that prior to this. So I think the biggest struggle for me is I just don't know what my body's going to feel like. I've never attempted all three of these things in the same day.
And you've done the halves, though, hey? Like, yeah. In the back of your mind somewhere is the feeling that if I can go half this distance, they should maybe make a three-quarter Ironman, do you know? Like, so that way everyone can just feel like they can step from one to the next to the next. And so after this one, because you'll no doubt conquer this race on the weekend, you will be an Ironman then, Katie, so that's exciting. And thereafter, what's next? Any other goals for 2019?
I have some pretty substantial goals I'm eagerly looking forward to. I have most the closest race I have following this Ironman this weekend is an open water race. It's called El Cruce, and it's in Cancun. They actually offer a few distances to swim, up to a 10K swim.
Which is nice. 10K is the marathon, isn't it?
Yeah, 10K is the marathon of open water swimming.
Yeah, cool.
I mean, in fact, to be honest, actually, I would maybe argue that the 10K is like the ultra marathon of swimming, but, you know, who am I?
Okay, that's cool. I'm open to that. I want to try and do a crazily long distance swim. And last night, a couple of the guys I trained with, I was just texting them, and they said, well, there is this swim that's 7K from a jetty to another jetty. And I thought, well, let's try that. You know, like the longest I've swam is in a pool, 5K. The longest in open water is 2K. But I mean, then what? Like, to me, it's kind of like trail running. I'd like to have someone nearby that could life save me if need be. But is it a bit the same thing? Like, you swim, and then if you need to, you just stop and doggy paddle, or you float on your back and do some survival backstroke or something? Like, there's no rules. I mean, even though that's a race that you're going in, no one's going to remember if I did some survival backstroke after the fact. You know, that's just for me, you know?
Yeah, the backstroke and doggy paddle, I mean, do what you got to do in these races. It's all street legal or ocean legal. But yeah. I think the difference here is that whereas if you're having some issues on a trail with your body, you're bonking, you ran out of nutrition, whatever, you could just stop and sit down or lie down. If you do that in the ocean, you drown. So
yeah.
You have to be careful. And usually these races are sanctioned and heavily supported. So for this race, and by the way, I'm not doing the 10K, I'm doing the 2.4 mile swim, but I do have someone who's coming with me and he's doing the 10K.
And 2.4 miles is still a long way.
It's still a long way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you have to have either a life support kayak that you provide that comes with you and it has someone in it. That way, if you are encountering an issue in open water, who knows, 2, 3, 4 miles out, you have a way to not die. But I think with this race, they actually hook. You'll have like a buoy that's attached to you and it has your nutrition in it, possibly even if you wanted to bring your phone or something, it's like a dry bag. And they will provide kayaks and boats that go out with them. It's from the beach to an island, I'm pretty sure. So if there's trouble afoot, you can hold on to your buoy and or there's going to be a lot of support around them to pull them out of the water.
I saw that you had a photo where you might have even been a giveaway from memory. It was like this bright yellow thing that looked like it was attached to your waist, kind of Baywatch style, but not. And I see people swimming with these things that are kind of floating behind. Is that what that is? I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, that's a buoy. It's not a buoy like an ocean, a really heavy ocean buoy that they hook up to kind of read water temperature and wave height. It's very light. It's inflatable just by you blowing into it. And I haven't used too many different brands, but I believe the majority of them, you can unroll it, stuff things inside of it, and the way that it rolls up and secures, no water is going to get into that. So it's a way for you to carry things with you. I don't use it too often. The rare times I do use it, it's if I'm swimming by myself. And I want to be visible. So where I swim, there's typically not a lot of boats at 6 a.m, which is when I would go out. But if I chose to swim in the afternoon on a weekend, you'll see a lot of people, like new boat drivers that don't really know what they're doing, out captaining their vessels, and I just want to be triple sure they can see that there's a person right there. So that's what I would use the buoy for. Okay. And I definitely use this buoy to swim a 10K.
Yeah, right. So and is it also like the benefit? Is that the kayak when you don't have a kayak? So I'm just wondering, you can put some nutrition in there, I'm guessing by the sounds of it. But if you got stuck, it helps. You could grab onto it and float.
Yeah. You grab onto it with both of your hands. And it's going to be very helpful, I think, for the swimmers that are doing this long distance swim in Cancun, because the water temperature is quite warm, to my knowledge. And so it's going to be a wetsuit illegal, non-wetsuit race. So that's a little bit trickier as well. Oh, that's right. You said you don't actually swim with the wetsuit. So
I need to get a wetsuit. I need to get one.
Well, you're training for this race and you don't even know it. So you need to sign up for next year because you don't need a wetsuit. the wetsuit just provides a little bit of extra flotation. And for me, a little peace of mind, should I need to just take a break and float on my back, the neoprene kind of lifts you up. So when you don't have that, the buoy's a nice backup.
Okay, I like it. Well, good luck for your triathlon on the weekend, also for the swim. That sounds like it'll be a good time for you. Out of curiosity, are there brands that you're working with at the moment?
I do. I work with a lot of brands. In terms of long-term sponsorship contracts, I am sponsored with PowerBar. People ask me all the time, oh, you're sponsored. How do you do that? Because I am not a professional triathlete. I don't have my pro card. And usually the way it goes is you're a professional athlete. You only do that to make your livelihood. And the way you make your livelihood is doing well in races and having sponsors pay you. So I have I'm one of some who are kind of paving the way in this new area of social media, who do not have to be professional athletes to have sponsorship contracts or deals with brands that pay us. I think it's the coolest thing I've ever discovered. It's really fun. It allows me to talk to and get to know so many people. And it is also a way for me to make money. However, it's not the only way that I make money, because I haven't quit my other jobs that I do to just train and be an athlete. But long term, that's the goal. And I really enjoy it. It allows me to travel. Because I said, I'm going out to do this race this weekend. I'm back in town for a week and then I'm going to Mexico. Most people can't do that. They either can't do it because of finances or they can't do it because they physically have to be in town where they live. So I have a lot of flexibility.
Now, it looked to me like there was a post or, you actually help others to, to work through this and potentially get to a similar point. I saw something and it was and the comments just kept coming one after the other where, people will ask, well, how can I get sponsored and how can I do this and how do you approach brands? And so that's something that you also do. Not only are you representing these brands, as yourself, as an athlete, you're also by the seams of it helping others to work out how they could potentially do that journey as well. Is that right?
Yeah. And I didn't know that's what I would end up doing or wanted to do. I've worked in social media and marketing for a while. I just didn't realize that was something that existed helping others through this until people started asking, hey, what's the magic sauce, But it's really fun to get to help them. I actually hosted a very small seminar, if you will, an online seminar in January about how to get sponsored in the way that I am sponsored versus being a professional athlete and sponsored. It was a little bit of a learning experience for me on how to give this information to others and learning what their questions were and what they actually wanted to get out of it. So I felt like it was a success. I have lots of ways I'm going to improve upon it, and I would like to be doing more seminars like that online, just so it's available for more people. And I do work one-on-one with air quotes, influencers, they're called, that are not necessarily in the fitness athlete space, but they do make money using their social media. And I act sort of like a manager for them, negotiating deals with other brands and companies on their behalf and making sure that everybody's happy in those exchanges.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in a way, like you can imagine, in my head, I've just imagined Jerry Maguire, Tom Cruise, you know, show me the money. But just having somebody else there, like, you know, that in that movie, the guy, he's a sensational footballer, but that doesn't mean that he's going to be able to go and know what to say or how to approach a brand, how to, you know, get sponsored, other than being great at what he does. And that's the typical athlete. You know, that you already can see clearly why they could be sponsored for these influencers. That is a very intriguing thing, because you can build up a following and people want to follow you, but that again doesn't mean that you're going to know how to approach businesses. So if people wanted to do that with you, how would they you know, work with you? Do they just hit you up on Instagram, or how does that sort of work?
Yeah, what an Adrian, just shoot me a DM. No, you can, if someone is curious about having a talk with me to get sponsored, to get more information about building a brand, anything that has to do with social media, they are more than welcome to reach out to me on Instagram. I always say I get a lot of messages. It depends on the day. And sometimes stuff falls through the cracks on Instagram. So it's better to email me. Mm-hmm. All of my contact information is available on my website, which is trylifefitness.com. Trylife is that word that you'll see a lot on Instagram with triathletes. It's just the lifestyle of triathlon. So anyways, trylifefitness.com, that has some information on it, some pictures of me, you know, there's a little bio about me, and you can shoot me an email there. But to be honest, maybe I shouldn't say this, but I answer a lot of questions for free, just mm-hmm. because I want to help people out. And I know from personal experience, it took me about 5 years to learn the tricks of the trade and how to build my own brand and get to the place that I'm at. And if I had someone who kind of just helped me a little bit, it wouldn't have taken so long. So I'm also happy to just answer some quick questions here and there. And then maybe they want to take that seminar once I get it together after I'm done doing an Ironman and an open water swim.
I like it. And you do sound like a very giving lady. It's certainly been a fun chat getting your perspective on things and seeing how, you know, you're living your life and putting things together. From your perspective, if you had to give three tips to people starting out in endurance activities or looking to get into endurance activities, what might they be?
Three tips to get into endurance activities. Oh, the tips. Okay. In no particular order, I don't know if I prioritize the first one that's coming out of my mouth, but three tips. I think, and this one people struggle with a lot, but you got to find a group to train with, just because it's going to improve the quality of your experience and the longevity of your participation in the sport that you choose. I cannot say that enough, because I didn't do that when I got into this. I did what I think a lot of people do, is I just said, oh, triathlon, here's a book I bought. I'm gonna do that. It looks like I need a bike and maybe I need this thing. And sure, that's a race. I'll sign up for that. And then I just trained kind of by myself, and it's lonely. You make a lot of mistakes in all your wins in training, or things that you figure out, or your actual wins at races. You don't get to share them. So yes, it's important to do it for yourself and be happy with your accomplishments, but it's also really cool to just have people there being like your cheerleaders and helping you through the training experience. So I really recommend, if you're going to get into triathlon or endurance, running, trails, all of that, do some research online, look for groups in your area, and just be brave. If you're kind of a nervous person that's not very social, show up. I guarantee you those people want you there and they're going to be your friends. So that's number one. Tip number two is you do not need, if we're talking about triathlon specifically, you don't need the fanciest stuff to have a really good experience. You don't need the most expensive bike. You don't need to have everything matching. If what's holding you back from doing a triathlon is the money, there is a financial barrier there, but you can buy things used. Ask questions to this group that you're going to call and train with. Ask people who've done it before. Borrow stuff. I mean, you can really piecemeal yourself a pretty awesome first triathlon experience, maybe even first triathlon season. That would be tip number two. And tip number three is always eat donuts. No, I'm just kidding.
And you know what, if that healthy lifestyle allows you to have some treats from time to time, you don't have to feel guilty about it, because you know it's not like you're balancing that thing out. You've probably earned it by that stage.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I am hashtag blessed to be a 6 foot tall female, so my body type is a little bit long and lean. It's a little bit not, I mean, it's not the only reason I work out a lot, but it's a little bit easier for me to have donuts and potato chips and not feel like I've really done something terrible to myself or my training. But I mean, I eat a lot of donuts. I really like donuts. They do make me feel ill if you have too many. So for the sake of feeling like you're healthy on the inside too, I'm a huge advocate for make sure you're eating, making healthy food choices. And then, yeah, don't feel guilty if you're going to have a donut here or there. Is this, this is my tip number three.
I like it. It's a good tip. It's a good tip. Eat healthy, but treat yourself.
Yeah, but treat yourself.
I like it. And so if people wanted to follow you along on your journey, we've heard about your website, but did you have some social media handles that you'd like to share?
I do. I have a couple. I'll spell it because I realize a lot of people don't know how to spell TriLife. So my Instagram, the one that made it big, that handle is TriLife, TRILIFE, underscore, the word at, AT, underscore, and then 30,000 feet, which is 30KFT. People ask me, what is that handle? Why do you have that? And it is not a fancy story. I was working for a startup, health and wellness startup, many moons ago. They were branded as 30,000 feet, and they wanted all of us to have our social media handles include that. So I just made mine TriLife at 30,000 feet. And then shortly thereafter, my Instagram kind of took off, and I was hesitant to change the handle because all of the people that knew me as that handle. I didn't want it all of a sudden be donuts at 30,000 feet and then no one knew how to do it. So I just left it. It's got, you know, it's got some history to it, but I do have a new one actually, which is much easier. It is just my first and last name, Katie Godek, at Katie Godek. And that's, I'm sure you'll have it typed out for this podcast, but it's the last name's G-O-D-E-C, Katie Godek. And that's been fun to build. I'm sharing a lot more personal things on that one, things that are not obviously triathlon related. Like, we actually just had a discussion about mental health on that Instagram account in terms of endurance sports. We talked about picking up trash at the beach and ocean health, lots of fun stuff. Fun stuff for me, maybe not fun stuff for everybody. So it's a little more of a deep dive into topics on that social media.
Yeah, cool. Well, look, this has been such a fun catch-up. I could imagine chatting, you know, for hours and hours more, finding out all more things about what you're into. But I certainly will be following along on your journey. And again, I just want to wish you well for your events that are coming up. And thank you so much for taking the time to have a chat.
Yeah, thank you. This has been really fun to talk.